All right, you guys can open your Bibles to the first page, page 1, Genesis chapter 1 is where we're going to be at tonight. Starting a brand new series, I am super excited about this. I always get excited when I teach, but there are some moments that I think to myself, if I can help you grab hold of this one concept, it has the chance to catapult your entire life forward. Like, this is going to be one of the most practical months of teaching that I've ever done that I think have the most chance of changing the way you live, practically speaking, on a daily basis. So I am wildly excited. I actually designed our entire way of doing things this entire year around this one series because I was that excited about it. So that's what we're headed into. It's going to be called Order from Chaos, and I'm super pumped about that. But I want to give you a couple of examples of what we're talking about this these coming weeks. So, Pastor David, if you would come up here for just a moment. Come on up here, Pastor David. I have asked Pastor David to give you a couple of examples here. One of the things, before he gets started, one of the things that I find fascinating, absolutely fascinating, is the fact that regardless of who is behind the piano, all of the keys are still there, which means that no matter who's there, all the answers are right there ready to go. Everybody has equal access to the exact same number of notes. And it can either sound like this, or it can sound like this. Exact keys. You know what the difference is? Organization. Order. It is taking, thank you so much, Pastor David. Give Pastor David a giant round of applause. The whole difference is taking the exact same raw pieces of information or raw notes and knowing how to organize them. Organize them in time with timing. Organize them relative to one another, knowing which ones go well with which other ones. It's absolutely amazing to me. It's all about organization. And this isn't just true in piano. I have dozens and dozens of paints here. I have greens. I don't even know where to put them. Well, they're going to go down there. I have greens, and I have this one's, I think this is peach. And I have oranges and a dark purple, and one that looks like it's sort of an ivory color, and brown, and another purple. I have so many of these. This is just a few. We have dozens and dozens of these downstairs in the basement because they all started, we bought like 250 of them at one point because we painted, you remember the cartoonish looking pictures that are up on the second floor? They all started like this. And they are an okay painting. But you know what? You could give me every possible shade of paint available to humanity. Every single one. You know what I can't do? I can't do this. It's a beautiful Van Gogh painting called The Cafe Terrace. It's one of my favorite pieces of art. And no matter how many paint colors I get, I am not going to paint the cafe terrace. Every time I look at this, I think, man, it's like getting to go on vacation without going anywhere. Just looking at it, it is warm, it is soft, it has an emotional, like this painting for me in particular, whether you have this response or not is not important, but for me, this painting, I have an emotional experience. It captures me. It invites me in. There is no way I could possibly do this. And you know what the difference is between this and what I could do? Organization. It is all about knowing where the colors need to go. It's all about knowing how to mix the colors together to create shape and form and contrast and all these amazing things. This is incredibly true in so many areas of our lives, particularly the most artistic areas of our lives. The thing that is always true is that great art is always bringing order. It is always an act of ordering the previously chaotic. It's not bringing something out of nothing. Art is always order. It's always organization. So what I cannot do is take a bunch of plastic and metal and properly organize it into a computer. But that's all a computer is. It's just plastic and metal. And if I knew how to organize it properly, I could make an amazing computer. I do not know how to take a bunch of 2x4s and all sorts of wood and metal and concrete and organize it into a building or one of those chairs that you're sitting on. It's the same basic idea. It's just organization. Does this make sense so far? Are you with me? Art, in almost all of its forms, are fundamentally about organizing or ordering what is available in the best possible way. This is incredibly important, and we're going to talk about this because God's initial act of creation, the details of it that we have captured, are fundamentally God creating through order. So you're looking at Genesis chapter 1. I told you to open to page 1. Genesis chapter 1. I'm going to read the first couple of verses to you. Here's what Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 1, says. It says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." That's sort of a summary statement. You know, it's nice to know what's going to come next. And so Genesis chapter 1 gives you this great summary statement. Hey, just so you know, you're about to hear the creation story. And then it goes on to actually explain that creation story. "The earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters." So we've got this picture of incredible chaos and mess and disorder and disarray. And there is God sort of floating over the chaos and disorder and disarray and disorganization. He's there kind of intimately connected with the disorganization, looking at it. He intimately connected with the chaos and dissatisfied with it. And that is the moment creation begins. And here's how it happens. It says, "And then God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light was good. And then he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day and the darkness night. And evening passed and morning came, marking out the first day." No matter what we're talking about, whatever it is in all of creation, whether we're talking about light and dark, or we're talking about the giant cosmos, or my little tiny cat at home, whether we are talking about the most beautiful mountains that you have ever seen, or just a little tiny mouse, whether we are talking about flaming suns or gentle breezes, all that is God's incredible creation. And I'd encourage you over the next couple of weeks to read Genesis chapter 1, because we are going to stay here quite a bit over the next couple of weeks. But I want to point out a couple of things about this story as it is told to us tonight. But before I do, I want to pause and make sure I make one quick announcement to you. Most of you should have received one of these on the way in. If you didn't, you can grab one on your way out. This is an invitation to you. We are going to be doing a morning class called Understanding the Bible. I have had, over the last year, I should have kept track, but I have had, particularly the folks who are rising up in leadership in our church, which is everybody. Right, please don't ever forget that. When I say the folks who are rising up in leadership in our church, I don't mean a select group of people. I often want to pause and remind you, I mean everybody. Because wherever you are at in the process, I see you as a potential leader. I was talking about this with one of the other staff members. There's somebody we were talking about, and I said, you know, Pastor David, so-and-so, I don't think they think they're a leader. And I said, and we need to correct that, because he is a leader. He has such potential to be a leader, and I want to help him succeed in that. And part of the way we want to help you succeed, one of the things that I have had these up-and-coming leaders, which is all of you, frequently saying to me over the last year is, you know, Pastor Joshua, I would love to be a leader, but I don't feel like I know the Bible well enough. I'm afraid that if I get into some position of influence, people are going to start asking me questions I don't know the answer to. And for years, my response to that has been, you know, it's okay. You don't need to know all the answers. There are plenty of times that I say I don't know stuff. And that's always going to be true. My daughter and I were talking this morning, and she said, you know, Dad, you say I don't know to like half my questions. And this is 100% true. I am stumped by my 8-year-old at least half the time. And I said, yeah, honey, that's because it's important that you know that I don't know everything. And you have to know it's okay to say, I don't know. That's important. And it is important. It's important to say, I don't know. But that doesn't give me an excuse to not give you more information. And so I have been thinking this through and looking forward to this and kind of sounding out with some of you throughout the last 3 or 4 months this idea of doing a one-shot how to understand the Bible. This might be the first among in a series of 3 or 4 classes that we do every year like this. I want to give you the opportunity to get a comprehensive Bible class that is really the best of the information that I have gotten in my 8 years of college and post-college work on Bible. I want to give you kind of the outline of the best of it, the stuff that I think is the most important, the stuff that is the most significant, the stuff that is the most practical. And so I just want to invite you to come. There's going to be a workbook involved. It's about 350 pages, so it's like going back to school. And I love school. I get excited when I go to school, but the reason school matters, and the thing that I realize that sometimes we don't talk about school is that school matters because information can change your life. School matters because sometimes the reason you are frustrated is because you don't know something. Sometimes the reason you feel left out is because you are lacking information. I want to make sure you have access to the best possible information. If you are thinking to yourself, I'm not sure that's for me, I would challenge you to talk to your small group leader or talk to me before you write yourself off, because I have not written you off, so I'm not letting you write yourself off. But I would love to have you be a part of that. You sign up online. There's a link on the little flyer that you can sign up with. If you're having trouble signing up online, you can talk to me. I can sign you up online. That's fine. Please don't let I don't know how to sign up online be the thing that stops you. But I would love to have you be at that. All right. Now, back to Genesis chapter 1. Man, I'm excited about this. Stick with me here. All right, here's what I want you to watch. I want to read you a couple of verses from this. We're not going to read the whole passage, but I want to read you a couple of verses about the creation story and what God is doing. The first one is chapter 1, verse 6. It says this, "Then God said, 'Let there be space between the waters to separate the waters of heaven from the waters of earth.'" God's very first creative acts, we saw this in light and day and night, God's very first creative act is separating things out that are not the same. The problem my son has with his toys is that when he puts them away, they are all put away in the exact same place. He puts his toys away by opening his closet and shoving everything into his closet and then like slamming the closet door closed. And there could be a teddy bear in there and Legos in there and a remote control car or two in there and a robot in there and a clock in there and a Frisbee in there and a couple of magic toys in there and cards in there and a game in there. And I don't mean a game in a box in there. I mean the parts of the game just shoved in with everything else, including the blankets from his bed because they were in the way, and trash. And one time we found, like, a box of Cheerios. I don't know how he got the whole box without us noticing, but he did. That is the opposite of what God was doing in creation. God was taking things and separating them out. Light from darkness. Later on, we'll see in this next verse, chapter 1, verse 9, it says this, "Let the waters beneath the sky flow together into one place so dry ground may appear." God is separating water, ocean, from dry ground. He's separating again. He's organizing again. And then in verse 12, it says, "Let The land produced vegetation, all sorts of seed-bearing plants and trees with seed-bearing fruit. The seeds produced plants and trees of the same kind. Again, think about the order that means that God is instilling in the universe. That when an apple tree comes to full growth, it has apples. When you plant an apple in the ground, we did this as a family at one point, we got an apple tree. That seems pretty commonsensical to us, but that is the sign. Every time an apple tree gives birth to another apple tree, you don't have a pear tree giving birth to an orange tree that develops a raspberry bush. When an apple tree results in another apple tree, we are seeing signs of the fact that God cares passionately about order and that there is something beautiful and creative in the idea of bringing order out of chaos. Let's keep going. Then chapter 114, God said, "Let the lights appear in the sky to separate the day from the night. Let them be signs to mark the seasons and the days and the years." Not only is he organizing spaces, not only is he taking specific things and putting them in the right place, when he splits out those places, he splits out land and sea and sky and ground, and when he splits out all of those things, and then he individually fills them with something that is appropriate. So he splits out land and sea, and then he puts fish in the sea and animals on the land. That seems so commonsensical, doesn't it? But do you think about what beauty there is in that kind of order? Imagine if God had decided to do this in the opposite direction. If he'd created fish and animals and all of that before thinking of creating places for them to live. Right? So God's like, all right, I want some fish, I want some foxes, I want some monkeys, I want some sharks. Boom, there it is. And all of a sudden, there's like a shark flopping around on the ground, and there's a monkey under 15 feet of water. There would be problems, right? The essence of God's creative work here is intentionally methodical. So intentionally methodical. He creates the spaces. He creates the times. That last verse we just read, he's intentionally creating a way of measuring time for us. Days, weeks, months, seasons. Why? Because God wants to make sure that everything in his creation is orderly and neat and organized. And this is creative. One of the things that I think is interesting is that we often split up when you think of the creative type. Think about that. Do you know what I mean by that? The artsy people. When you think of the creative type, do you think of them as having an incredibly organized kitchen? Do you think of them as having a neat home? Do you think of them as having everything put in its place? No, right? Like, you think of people who are living in a whirlwind. And somehow we have divided these two things in our mind. There's the artsy creative types, and then there's the boring folks who just like to make order and organize stuff. And one of the fundamental rules or fundamental teachings of the creation story, the way that God does it, is that there is something breathtakingly creative in bringing order out of the chaos. That is what God does. So when you are going into your room and making it orderly, you are doing something that is beautifully creative and reminiscent of the very first creative work of God. When you go to your calendar and schedule your life out so that things can get done in their proper time, so that when you say, I will be there at 5, you're there at 5, not 5:15 or 5:30. When you're doing that, you are doing something that is beautifully and wonderfully creative, that is deeply reminiscent of the very first creative work of God. It's amazing. You know, I went down into my basement just the other day. I went down into my basement, and I noticed, and I'll be honest, by the way, hopefully you know, if you've been around for any length of time, if you're newer here to the church, let me remind you, When we realize we are not good at stuff, that is not a moment that we need to feel shame or embarrassed or bothered. We don't expose the fact that we are weak in certain areas so that we can like beat ourselves up. Oh, I'm such... No small group conversation should ever be, oh, I'm so awful at this. First of all, because I don't want you to feel that way. Second of all, because that's not really very productive, so let's not waste our time on that. But I went down into my basement, and I looked at my tools in my basement and realized that God's beautiful created order has yet to hit my basement. Like, for real. My tools are everywhere. It's just a mess down there. And I was thinking about this because I knew I was going to be teaching this, that is not the way God would do it. God wouldn't just have tools sort of strewn all over the place. And I thought to myself, why is it I have my tools all over the place? There's a very simple answer to this. Because there is no actual spot set aside for my tools. I can't organize them without a spot to organize them in. Does it make sense? So step one is going to be creating a spot. Step two will be putting the things neatly in that spot. Does that make sense? You can't do it the other way around. And this is not surprisingly reminiscent of what we just said God did. God didn't just make animals and fish and stuff. He had to make the water, make sure there was a space for the fish, make the dry land, make sure there was a space for the animals, and then put them there. Very similarly, I am, in my own far lesser but still significant way, going to have to make sure that there is a space for my tools and then put them there. The primary problem I've had is that I never bothered to do step one. I've tried to just live with the space I have, which is not really adequate, and sort of just get all my stuff there. But once I get my stuff into an inadequate spot, it doesn't work and I don't really like it, and so I don't have any motivation to keep it that way. The reason I bring this up is because I want you to know that not only is God a profoundly beautiful creator who is always bringing order out of chaos, but he designed you to do the exact same thing. If you ever think to yourself, no, I just function best when things are a mess around me, you are incorrect. You are believing a lie about you. You simply have never succeeded in order for whatever reason. God designed you to be an order bringer, to live order. So here's the verse on this, skipping to the end of the story. It says in Genesis 1:27, it says, "Then God blessed them and said, 'Be fruitful and multiply,'" this is to mankind, "'fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and all the animals that scurry along the ground.'" The word govern here is an interesting word. One of the things you do if you're ever trying to really understand the Bible, and this is so easy now, you go to some app where you can like change translations a whole bunch of different times, and you just read the same verse in like four different translations. And so a lot of times I'll look at NLT because that's the one that actually helps me understand the best most of the time, but... It's kind of common everyday language, so a lot of times I'll switch over to English Standard Version, ESV, because it's kind of fancy words, and so it's a little bit more nuanced in the way it says things. And I think it's ESV that says, it's in this word, this verse it says, "Fill the earth and subdue it," instead of "govern." Those words kind of mean the same thing, but there's a little bit of a difference with subdue. And subdue really is a word that means, hey, things are chaotic over there. You need to bring order to the chaos. That's what the word subdue means, right? Like, if I send my kids into their room and I say to them, "Hey guys, you need to get control of your room." What I'm saying is, your room's a mess, clean it. Now, here's the picture of creation. If you read Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, I want to summarize the big picture of the story so that you can see what God is really saying. There is this kind of initial chaos that I described with the water and the darkness and all of that, that God then begins through the sixth and seventh days of creation to bring order by creating land and creating sea and putting fish in the sea and dry and animals on the land and birds in the sky and all of that stuff. And then he creates one place on earth that is perfectly ordered. It's the Garden of Eden. And then he puts mankind in the garden. And then he says to mankind, now go fill the earth and subdue it. What's the idea there? The idea, the mental, the word picture there is I created a stronghold of order for you to start with. And now you need to push back the boundaries of order into the places of chaos. The whole rest of the world is still pretty chaotic. But your job is to go out into the chaotic parts of the world and bring order. You're supposed to subdue the earth. This is not the fundamental calling of Christians. We are way too early in the story for that. This is God's fundamental design for all of humanity, is to bring order out of chaos. That is what you were designed for. You were designed to be God's representative that goes into any place there is disorder, any place there is chaos, and bring order to it. And so I want to kind of start our series this week with two basic rules. Two basic rules about orderly creativity, about creative order. And they are this. Number one, there needs to be a place for everything. If you want to be creating order in life, step one is there must be a place for everything. Sometimes it's a physical place. About 2 months ago, I was super frustrated because we have this giant corner cabinet in our kitchen, and all the pans and pan lids and plastic stuff and butter containers that we use to like put lunches in and all of that kind of stuff, like all just got shoved in there every time we needed it. So you had to like swim through a giant cabinet's worth of random pots and pans and plasticware to find the piece that you needed. I was so aggravated. And so I said to my daughter, Hannah, you want to spend some time organizing this with me? And much to my shock, she said yes. So we did. We took every single thing out of the corner cabinet. Every single thing. Then we cleaned the inside of the cabinet because we wanted to start fresh. We wanted a spot where everything would work. And then we decided together, okay, the metal pans go in this spot. And the lids go in this spot. And the plastic stuff goes in this spot. And the napkins go over here. There needed to be a spot for everything. A place for everything. And sometimes it's a physical place. Sometimes, though, it's a place in your calendar. It's a temporal place. So, for example, somebody came up to me the other day and they said, oh, and I might be somebody here. I don't remember who asked me this. But somebody said, Pastor Joshua, when do you do most of your prep work for Wednesday nights? And I said, oh, that's easy. I block off certain times throughout the year to do my kind of big picture planning. So at this point, I know what I'm teaching about for every single week of the year, unless we change something. But then the details of it, I block off about 4 or 5 hours on Wednesday to prepare so that it's nice and fresh when I get here on Wednesday night. And I have done it at the exact same time for years. Matter of fact, I used to do it at the exact same time and the exact same place every single week for years. So much so that when I walked into Demichi's, they didn't even ask me what I wanted anymore because I got the cheap $2.11 refillable cup of coffee because it's the only place in Lynn that does that anymore. That's why I went there. And they didn't even ask me anymore because it had to be decaf because I'm a little peppy. They didn't ask. It would just be, they would see me coming around the corner, and by the time I got to the counter, my coffee would just be waiting for me. Because I was there at the exact same time, so I saw the exact same people, and I got the exact same thing over and over and over again. I'm not saying you need to be that routine about your life, but if things are important, they have a time slot in them for them. Somebody once said to me, well, if it's really important, I'll just think of it at some point and I'll do it then. It'll just happen spontaneously. And I said, really? So do you expect like doctor's appointments to work that way? Are you hoping that like the kids' school is going to happen that way? Do you want the kids at school, the teachers, to be like, you know what? We're just going to spontaneously decide what subjects we're going to do each day. Does that sound like a good plan? No, of course it doesn't. Because what really matters is what we schedule. That is the true thing. If it matters, we put it in our schedule and we make it work because it's in our schedule. This is true of people. So I am not, there are so many things like this for me. It's very funny. So this happens to be my sister's 40th birthday today. Sister's 40 years old. And that's a big one. I am not interested in finding out whether I'm going to remember that. It's in my calendar with a timer to remind me to text my sister. Why? Is it because my sister is so unimportant I might forget? No, it's because she's so important I'm determined not to forget. See the difference? It's in my calendar. That means it matters. So sometimes it's a physical place. Sometimes it's a time place. Sometimes it's a place I want resources to be taken care of. So if I have a bunch of books, which I do, I need to make sure I have enough bookshelves. If I care about my finances, I need a place to look at my finances. So we use Mint. It's an app. If I care about cleaning in the church, I better have a spot where the cleaning supplies go. And it's funny, for years we did not have this. People would say that I would have volunteers come in and they would say, Pastor Joshua, where are the cleaning supplies? And I would say, well, some of them are over there, and some of them are over there. And they'd say, where's the vacuum? And I'd say, well, it might be over there, or it might be up on the second floor, or in the basement, or in the back. This is not helpful. What is helpful, and then I think it was Mary came up with the idea, we bought several different vacuums, and each one we taped an identifier on it. Please return to, and then there's a spot where it goes. Why? Because sometimes you need a spot for your resources. Sometimes you need a spot where you want your resources to go. So I want some of my resources to go to missions. I want some of my resources to go to tithing. Sometimes that spot limits how many resources I can have. The size of my drawers and closet must limit the amount of clothing I have, or my life will be chaos. So places don't just give you a reason to order, a way to order things by allowing you to put things away, but they also give you an upper limit. I can only have enough stuff to fit in this closet. So the first thing is you need to find a place. A place for everything. And number two, everything goes in its place. A place for everything and everything in its place. Here's what I mean. This is a discipline. It is a discipline of deciding every single time I take a book off the bookshelf, it goes back on the bookshelf. Every single time I use a tool, it goes back in the tool bucket or on the tool shelf. Every single time the cabinet, the corner cabinet with the pots and pans, we have done this. It's been great. It's been 2 months. And I checked last night because I knew I was going to talk about it. Every single pan lid was in the right spot, warmed my heart. I had a moment with Jesus. It was beautiful. I thought, I am a creator right now. But I am, right? Like, that is literally what God was doing in that first chapter of Genesis. He was bringing order out of chaos. And I may not be able to do it in a whole world, but I can do it in a corner cabinet. And I can be just like Jesus. And so, everything in its place. It means putting stuff back. It means the job's not done till the tools are put wherever they belong. Whatever kind of tools they are, whether it's a book, or whether it's money being put back in my wallet, or it's my keys. So I'm a person who loses things, so this is an important thing for me. My phone has to be put in the exact same place all the time, not because I'm uptight, but because I lose stuff. My keys must go in the exact same spot. The other day, I went to my jacket. I grabbed my jacket because I was unlocking the front door, and I keep in my jacket pocket at all times. It is literally not here as I'm about to give this example. That's awesome. I put it there. earlier today. I am now going to freak out until I find out where it is. There is an Allen wrench that belongs in my front coat pocket. It is always there, except for twice this week, and now I'm really aggravated about that. But why do I keep an Allen wrench in my coat pocket? Because I need to be able to unlock that front door, and the only way to do that is with an Allen wrench, and I don't want to have to go hunt around for the stupid Allen wrench, and the only way to make sure I don't have to hunt for an Allen wrench is to have an Allen wrench spot. And I actually have two Allen wrench spots. I have an Allen wrench spot in my car for one Allen wrench and an Allen wrench spot in my coat for the other Allen wrench to make sure that I have enough Allen wrenches so that if I lose one, I have a backup plan. But I have an Allen wrench spot, and I will immediately, before I leave this place tonight, go get another Allen wrench so that there's an Allen wrench in the Allen wrench spot, because it matters. And I know that sounds silly, but it doesn't when you're at a place at 9:30 at night and there's no Allen wrench and you're trying to lock a door and you're stuck at the church for an hour and a half trying to figure out how to lock a door without the tool. So I got an Allen wrench spot. Everything in its place, a place for everything and everything in its place. It's the discipline of, one, putting things back in their spot, and two, not putting other stuff in the wrong spot. If I decide I'm going to put all the kitchen towels in the spot where all the pans go, none of the pans are going where they belong. If I let my kids put the spot where my put their toys, they're like spring toys that are downstairs in the basement right now. If I let them pile all their spring toys in the spot where my tools go, my tools will not be able to go in the tool spot. It's the discipline of saying, yes, this is going back where it belongs, and no, that is not going where something else belongs. It has to go both ways. But you do those two things together, and you will keep a spot for everything. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about three different places, three different ways or areas that we can create order in our lives. Time, a time for everything and everything in its own time. Space, a place for everything and everything in its own place. And resources, a use for everything and everything for its own use. Time, space, resources. Now, in just a moment, we're going to break up into some discussion groups. This, to me, is not something for us to think about at all, because it's not that complicated. God's really creative because he likes order. You were designed to be really creative because he designed you to thrive in order. And there's a lot of chaos in the world, and it is encroaching on our lives, so let's go fix it. That's really all I just said. I just spent a really long time telling a lot of stories about it. But I want to get you thinking about this, because over the next month, as we continue to talk about creating order out of chaos, I want you, just like we did if you joined us for our last series, we did something very similar to this. I want you to pick one area. I want you to think about this right now. You can report to your small groups in just a moment. Think about this. One area, either time, space, or resources. Time, space, or resources. I want you to pick one. I personally am going to pick space. You already probably know what my goal is here. I'm going to pick space, but then I want you to narrow that goal down of the area, whatever area you picked. I want you to think, what is one specific way that I can create greater order in that part of my life? How can I create greater order in the area of space in my life? Is there a place in my life that needs greater order, like my car or my office or my room or my whatever? Is there a space that needs order or time? Is there a particular way that I need to create greater order in my time? Do I need to intentionally put every single thing I'm going to do into my calendar? Do I need to intentionally put reminders in my phone for the 10 things I want to do every single day? How can I bring greater order to my time and get rid of the chaos in my time? Or resources? Are there specific resources in your life that you want to be more orderly about using for their intended purposes? Either your finances or your home or your vehicle or whatever. I want you to think about one of those, and I want you to narrow it down to a specific area that you can spend 1 month bringing greater order to. So I told you that my basement is a mess, particularly the part of my basement. And watch, by the way, my basement is a more than a one-month mess. I got to be honest. There's a lot of mess in my basement. It's like a three-month mess. So I'm not going to say I'm going to bring order to my whole basement over the next month. I am saying that I am going to bring order to the part of my basement that revolves around my tools. That's it. So you're going to narrow things down. What is one way that over the next month I can genuinely bring greater order to my life? And then each week for the next month, we're going to set specific or take specific action steps each month, each week, and then report back to our group about how we did on that action step. So for example, my action step this week probably will be to buy the supplies that I need to create the space that I can put my tools. I'm not going to make anything. I'm not going to build anything. I'm just buying the supplies. That is what I can accomplish. By the way, group, I'm not, men who are in my small group, I'm not going to be in a small group. Now you know what my thing is, so you can hold me accountable next week. And we tell each other these things. We narrow it down so that it's realistic. We tell each other these things because when you tell other people, you can gain accountability. And accountability is an important part of actually accomplishing our goals.